On today's programme, NPHET backs accelerated reopening of the country but warns it is not without risk. We talk to Professor Philip Nolan. Why are hotel dining rooms safer than restaurants and bars? The Irish Restaurants Association demands an explanation and a date for reopening. Will candidate selection for the Dublin Bay South by-election trigger internal party strife in Fine Gael and the Greens? And who's afraid of a border poll? All that and more coming up after the news with Susan Jackson. Thanks, Susan. Good afternoon and welcome to Saturday with Katie Hannan. My panel today, Peter Burke, Minister of State for Local Government and Planning, Piers Doherty, Sinn Féin spokesperson on finance, and Labour Party Senator Ivana Bacsik. You can text us on 51551, email saturday@rte.ie or tweet to @SaturdayRTE. But first today, I'm joined on the line now by Professor Philip Nolan, Chair of the NPHET Epidemiological Modelling Advisory Group. Professor Nolan, you're very welcome.
Good afternoon, Katie.
This reopening plan, Professor Nolan, you're banking on people to meet outdoors only, particularly during the month of May and June, and keep contacts low to contain this pandemic. Can you just explain to us why that is important?
Absolutely. I mean, this is the right thing to do, first of all. You know, it's 61 weeks since our first case. It's 18 weeks since we entered level five. So it's this, you know, we crave social contact. We need to buy clothes, shoes, books. So it's essential we take this step now and allow some of the activities that are lowest risk and most important to us, highest return, to resume. But in saying that, you can take any given thing like going to the shops or meeting up with a group of friends for a drink outdoors. You can do that safely or unsafely. So the fundamental thing we require right now is that each of us individually takes the responsibility to go about those things safely, to pay attention to wearing our mask. Outdoors is safer, but you still need to keep your distance from people. Don't be getting in their face, as they say, while you're together. And then also institutions and organisations and enterprises also have a responsibility. This is the time to reinforce the guidance and protocols and practices that keep us safe. So I'm asking, please don't push the limits on this. Please don't drift indoors. Please don't try and accelerate the programme. We can't go faster than this safely. The objective over the next 8 weeks is to make these things that are really important to us. We want to get together. We want to be able to buy the basics. We want to be able to restart the economy. Please make this work by observing safe practices all the way through. It's low risk, provided we take care.
Low risk, but you did say yourself that 500 cases a day, and we're not far off that on some days at this point, that even that number of cases in people under 40, which are, as we know, much less vulnerable to this than older cohorts, that would translate to 6 to 8 hospitalizations every day and a death every 10 days. Yeah. Are we basically saying that's now an acceptable risk to go forward with reopening?
I think what we're saying is the experience of the past 6 or 8 weeks has shown us we're simply not going to get cases down further. And also, I think population behaviours are getting ahead of us. There's a certain amount of time over which people are willing to stay home, willing to stay indoors. And I think it's important that what we do is we acknowledge where people are at, that people are making those risk calculations in their heads and beginning to get out there and beginning to do more. So what's better is to give people the safest possible framework within which to operate.
But if things, numbers, incidences of the virus start to get away from us again, we have been warned now that the government will consider slamming on this emergency brake. Is there any sense you can give us now of where we would need to be at for that to be considered?
So one of the things that's important to remember here is that we're learning as we go here. This is the truth of it. All through last summer and autumn, we were dealing with previous variants of the virus. Now we're dealing with B117, which we know to be significantly more transmissible. The best estimates are that it's 40 to 90% more transmissible. That's a huge range. So over the next few weeks, we're going to understand how does this new variant actually behave as we very cautiously open up. We're going to learn actually ourselves and colleagues internationally, actually how effective is the vaccine in interrupting transmission. And signs are very positive in that regard. And also signs are very positive about how good we are as a population in limiting our contacts and going about things safely. So yes, we're absolutely optimistic here that as we proceed along these lines, that case numbers may not actually increase because the kinds of activities that we're supporting here are essentially outdoors, or if they're indoors, they're in very low density environments in large, reasonably well ventilated spaces. So there is a possible pathway through this over the next 8 weeks where case numbers don't go up. And what we need to do over the next 8 weeks is individually observe those practices as best we can. And then as a public health group, we'll be monitoring very carefully for any early signs that things are going wrong. And if things are going wrong, where are they going wrong and what can we do about it?
But can you give us any sense now of what kind of numbers would trigger that concern amongst NPHET?
It's not specifically numbers. It will be sustained growth in case numbers and how fast case numbers are accelerating over a period of 10 days to 2 weeks that would trigger the alarm.
Okay.
And we do also have to acknowledge that on previous occasions, any time that we have eased restrictions, there's been a transient where case numbers go up and then may settle again. So we are going to have to watch carefully over a sustained period. Is there any signal within the daily case counts, hospitalizations and so on, that suggests there's a sustained growth in the epidemic? The early phases of exponential growth, if I can be clear about it. And at that point, then we'd have to raise an alarm. But to pull back, I think it's important to say that our assessment at this time is that if people enter into the letter and spirit of the new framework that's laid out here, that the risk of that happening remains low to medium risk.
That assessment, though, is based on vaccine uptake and the speed of the rollout as it is currently set. And of course, we know that that doesn't always go to plan. Is that another risk that needs to be built into this?
That risk has been built into it. And one of the things that we do need to acknowledge is that despite those bumps in the road, the vaccination programme is going extremely well. And we are very much on track to sustain the sorts of reopening that we're talking about here and be in a better position for July and August as the vaccination programme rolls out during May and June.
Can I ask you just that you speak about bumps in the road, the most recent and rather large bump was that recent advice from NIAC in relation to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and, you know, limiting that to people in their 50s and older. Has that been factored into these projections?
It obviously wasn't factored into the ones in which the decision was made last week, but will be factored into the projections that we make in coming weeks for what might happen in July, August, September. And importantly, I mean, there are lots of uncertainties in these models. The biggest uncertainty actually turns out to be how much more transmissible is the B.1.1.7 variant really? You know, how much more easily does the virus spread now compared to last summer? The next uncertainty is how effective are the vaccines in interrupting transmission? And they seem to be very effective, but we need to confirm that. The least important uncertainty in terms of the timing of what's going to happen over the course of the summer is vaccine supply. So that's one of the reasons why we couldn't advise, and appropriately government didn't decide, what precisely will we do in July, August and September? Because of those levels of uncertainty, we couldn't estimate risk with sufficient precision to offer clear advice. So again, I think government did the right thing here to say, let's be really cautious about what we do in May and June. And as we understand more and more in the course of May and June about
How good this operates outdoors, indeed.
Exactly. And it brings me back to the point that what we need to do now is make May and June work. And if that leaves us in a good, we need to leave ourselves in a good position for what we can do in July and August.
Can I talk to you about Donegal? Because there's been a lot of focus on its current trajectory, almost 300 cases per 100,000 compared to, what is it, 127 incidents level nationally. Could Donegal be facing the prospect of reintroducing level 5 restrictions until these cases come down?
Well, that's not where you'd start. I mean, first of all, we're going to see this as particularly as the rollout of the vaccine brings the disease, suppresses the disease more broadly across the island. We are going to see outbreaks for one reason or another. We are going to see parts of our country where it seems more difficult to suppress the disease. And we're seeing that right now in Donegal. And the first step in managing that kind of problem is local engagement. It's to work with the community through the local, the regional department of public health to understand why we've got persistent disease and what can we do about it. And that community engagement and community leadership matters. That's what regional departments of public health do, and that's why we need to resource them. And that's the first step. The first step is at local and community level to see what the problem is and how it can be fixed.
To be fair, this has been a persistent issue in Donegal. And with all that local engagement that must have been ongoing for all this period now, they're still where they are. I mean, look at Milford, 675 per 100,000. Letterkenny, 600 per 100,000. You know, and Donegal has been one of those counties that were put under more draconian restrictions than other counties previous to this. So I'm just wondering, does that have to be raised as a possibility for them now?
Well, to be clear, I mean, going into the future, at the moment we're in a position where we have a nationwide approach to this and the country as a whole is in one position. But absolutely, as the disease is suppressed more broadly and as public health restrictions across the country can be cautiously relaxed, there's always the possibility that a regional approach may have to be taken at some point in the future in order to contain the disease and suppress the disease in a particular part of the country. And we did that before. It works under certain circumstances. It worked last summer. When we had to do it in other parts of the country. And different parts of the country have had difficulty at different times. And mostly they're solved by specific community level intervention through regional public health. But you're absolutely right. Sometimes, and we're not at that point yet, it does require regional restrictions of some kind or another.
Okay.
And I think there was a very clear message from public health leadership on both sides of the border reported on your bulletin earlier about what communities need to do and communities need to be supported in doing that in order to bring the disease under control in that part of the country.
Yes, indeed. Can I talk to you about indoor dining then? Because we know that NPHET has described indoor dining, you've done it yourself there, that's high risk activity. Mm. In that case then, why are hotels being allowed to reopen with indoor dining from June 2nd?
Well, I think it's the other way around. I think hotels are being allowed to reopen. And if you think about it, hotels compared to a restaurant or a pub, they're relatively low density in terms of the amount of space they have and how it's occupied, and they're relatively low turnover. You know, you go to a restaurant for a couple of hours, you go to a hotel usually for a couple of days. And if you're staying in a hotel, frankly, you have to eat. And the sole purpose of permitting indoor dining in the hotel setting is because if you're a guest in a hotel, you have to be provided with food. And, you know, particularly given the level of hotel occupancy one might expect and that it's confined to overnight guests and residents of the hotel, the owners of the hotel should be able to operate their restaurant in a very controlled manner. And it does bring me back to that fundamental point where something is enabled under this framework, individuals and institutions have obligations to make it safe and to make it work and to lay the groundwork for any later reopening which might occur in related sectors.
International travel, Philip Nolan, the Taoiseach has raised the possibility now of international travel resuming from July with this new digital green certificate across the EU. This is obviously is assuming many other things like our vaccination rollout going to plan. Is there a view in Neffet in relation to that? Because I think many people had put that off in their heads until the autumn, but this has reintroduced it into people's minds.
Well, I won't speak for Neffet because Neffet are working through things sequentially, and there's one set of policy issues around travel which we're dealing with at the moment, which is the prevention of inward introduction of new variants. But more broadly, of course, it's an objective for government, and it'll be an objective for us to provide the appropriate public health advice to progressively enable international travel into the future.
As soon as July, though?
Well, I couldn't comment on the as soon as July. It's something that Neffet will need to look at over the coming weeks. But I think it is important to engage. I mean, there is an EU-wide process to ensure that there's some means by which we can significantly reduce the risk of international travel into the future. And we would certainly be working to support that, both in terms of the public health advice that would underpin it and also in terms of understanding at what point in our vaccination programme and our public health situation it would be appropriate to advise that sort of international travel could resume. Okay. But it's certainly something that will be looked at in the coming weeks because preparations would need to be made for beyond the end of June. At what point is this possible? So in no way am I saying that the Taoiseach is wrong to say it could happen at that point. What I'm saying is a lot of work needs to be done between now and the end of June to support government in deciding at what point it would be possible to support that EU-wide reopening of travel.
Okay. Finally, can I just ask you about the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine being submitting a request to the EMA to expand the use of that vaccine now to include adolescents aged from the 12 to 15 age group? That's very exciting, isn't it? Or is it?
Well, it's important. It's important. We may need at some point in the future to vaccinate people in that age group. We don't know if it will be necessary or appropriate just yet.
Are you saying we may not need to vaccinate children?
We may not. It's a decision. What I'm saying is that it's a decision for a later date. On the one hand, it's plausible that if a sufficiently large proportion of the adult population is vaccinated, that'll achieve a sufficient level of protection that it won't be necessary to vaccinate people under 16. However, and in particular with B117, this is a very transmissible virus, and to suppress the transmission of a very transmissible virus, you need very high levels of population coverage with vaccination. So it may become necessary to vaccinate people in that age group. And if it does become necessary, it'll be essential that there is a safe and effective vaccine to give them. So it is good news that if we need it, we'll know whether or not we do have a safe and effective vaccine for that age group.
Okay, great. Okay, Professor Philip Nolan, we leave it there. Many thanks for giving us your time this bank holiday weekend. And there we'll take a break.
Saturday with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. And just to remind you, my panel today is Fine Gael's Minister of State, Peter Burke, Sinn Féin's Piers Doherty and Labour Senator Ivana Bacik. And if I can go to you first in our Donegal studio, Piers Doherty. Piers, what is going on in Donegal? Are you seeing people doing things that, as Tony Hoolan said, the dogs in the street know shouldn't be happening?
No, I'm not, to tell you the God's honest truth. And I think Donegal has, anybody who knows Donegal and knows the numbers in Donegal, it's not a picture right across the same county. So, for example, South Donegal has about a quarter of the rate of the state average. West Donegal had the lowest incident rate just about a fortnight ago in the entire state. Yet we have two electoral areas that are quite high and have been for quite some while. But Katie, just remember this. 2 weeks ago when we were raising Padraig McLaughlin, my colleague in the Dáil, about additional supports for Donegal in terms of testing, the minister was making the point that Donegal was mid-table. And that was just 2 weeks ago, where counties like Dublin and Kildare and Laois and Meath and all that were above them in terms of incidence rates. So Tony Holohan has absolutely played excellent, and he's done so at a time of very personal pressure on himself. But I think the comments yesterday in terms of the wide brush that he used were regrettable. But look, we have
really?
A meeting.
Really? You take exception to those comments?
No, I think that we have to recognise that people right across the state are making huge sacrifices. And I think maybe that was lost in terms of how his message was reported. But I do think that there's positives that come out of it. I've spoke to the minister this morning and I made that point. At least people in Donegal are talking about this. And there's no doubt about it. The incident rates are far too high in Donegal. And we need to get them back to where we were a couple of weeks ago, which is mid-table and below.
Sorry to cut across you, Piers Doherty, but the issue that was raised was about leadership, the question of leadership. So what would you say to people in Donegal today?
Well, I would say that we need to abide by the restrictions. I would say that we need to limit our interactions. I would say we need to be very careful in relation to the reopening of the economy. We're very familiar that, for example, the North is a way ahead of us in terms of the vaccination programme, and that's really good because it keeps people in Donegal safe as well, because we've high incidence rates in Derry and Strabane compared to the rest of the North. But we are going to see services open up, so indoor dining, indoor pubs will be opening up at the end of May or before the end of May in the North. So I think is really important. But I also would make the point that people who have contracted COVID in Donegal, a lot of them didn't do it as a result of blatant abuses of the restrictions. People contact COVID by no fault of their own in workplaces, in school settings, and yes, through community transmission. And I think that's important to say as well. So we just need to do a lot better. We need to get to a position where we were a number of weeks ago, which was mid-table, and then we need to suppress it further.
And do you need more facilities such as more pop-up test centres?
And that's the point. And, you know, a lot of people in Donegal have been making those points. And my colleague, Padraig McLaughlin, as I said, was raising that issue just last week. It's a big county. And what I'm saying is that Donegal, it's not the same picture right across the county. As I said, in South Donegal, it's a quarter of the incident rate in the rest of the state. The incident rate's 40 per 100,000. In West Donegal, it was similar, although in the last couple of days, it's getting worse. So people have made huge sacrifices. We need to recognise that and we need to ask them to go further. So we were asking for additional pop-up centres, testing centres. The walk-in testing centre in Donegal only happened last week. So it's okay for people to commentate about, Donegal's persistently at high levels, and it has been far too high for far too long.
Okay.
But we also need support. So at least this evening, we are having a meeting with the minister, with the CEO, with all the TDs, with the county manager, and, you know, that hopefully we can look at what additional we can do to give people to Donegal. But again, it always comes back to this, and I've said this over and over again, it comes down to personal decisions and how we operate and how we abide by the restrictions and how we make sure we follow the public health advice to make sure that we keep everybody else and ourselves safe in the time ahead.
Okay, Peter Burke, what more can be done here to get these numbers down in Donegal? Because inter-county travel is about to open up. This isn't just a localised issue, or won't be just a localised issue very shortly.
Well, I think, first of all, the common enemy is the virus in all of this. So it's not about personal blame. I think what Pierce is saying, they're having all the actors meeting. Engagement is very important to see what more supports the government can give. You know, we've huge capacity ramped up now. Over 125,000 tests were carried out over the last week. Pierce referenced in terms of Donegal how it was increasing. I know in my own county and in the Midlands, we've had huge issues over the last number of months, but we have reasonably stabilised it. And we've had pop-up centres, which provided asymptomatic walk-ins for people. And it's surprising how pockets can be found and traced. We've almost 1,000 contact tracers now.
We keep hearing stories of things like parties, of birthday parties, bringing it back into schools, of wakes, weddings. There are, as Tony Hoolan said yesterday, there are things happening that should not be happening.
Look, I think the first thing we have to do is stop apportioning blame immediately. People are very frustrated, so we need to get people to work with us. We need to encourage personal responsibility. And I have to be clear that from my own community and seeing it right across the board, like 90% of people plus have obeyed their restrictions most of the time. They've done their very best because people have sacrificed so much. And Professor Nolan really alluded to it there. That's one of the first times really I heard Neffet pointing out in terms of, you know, social issues, economic issues, from buying basic products that we need. You know, people need to be supported now. So working together, we will do our very best to try and keep it under control.
Ivana Batchel.
Well, clearly this is the common enemy is the virus, and I do agree about apportioning blame. I think this, you know, there has been perhaps too much finger pointing. On the other hand, I was surprised to hear Piers Doherty take issue with Dr. Tony Hoolan's comments. I think that Tony Hoolan has done such an incredible job through such a difficult time.
Which, to be fair, Piers Doherty also acknowledged.
I said it's a pity just the broad brush and how it can be interpreted. I think there's good that has come out of his comments. Donegal is talking about this issue. We're talking about the national media. There is a meeting, but I think it's important for people out there who've contacted COVID that it wasn't as many of them wasn't a result of blatant abuses.
And that needs to be recognised as well.
So I'm trying to be very measured. And I've also said that Tony Hoolan has absolutely gone above and beyond at a time of very personal difficulty for himself and guiding us through this. So I don't want an interpretation that I'm taking issue with him. I just think that there is an issue in Donegal.
Okay, let Ivana make
continue,
a point.
Piers, as I said, I think until now what we've seen is Neffet advising on a county by county basis and county rates being used as measures. And clearly that's imperfect. And clearly there are within counties pockets of outbreaks. But I think there are very clear ways to tackle those outbreaks. And Philip Nolan was so clear there, speaking about the need for community leadership. So it's very welcome to hear that a meeting is being organised for this, that there is local community leadership, that local and regional public health teams are working on it. But we do also need to see alongside those walk-in centres, which have been so successful in different areas, we do need to see rollout of rapid antigen testing too, where you have pockets of outbreaks, where, for example, in particular workplaces or particular settings are seen to be high risk. We in Labour have been consistently calling for greater deployment of antigen testing in those sort of areas where we could really identify then where there are pockets of outbreaks which can be contained and which then can prevent onward transmission. Absolutely nobody can be, you know, there's no point or purpose in blaming. We all have a common enemy.
Is there a point of stating it very clearly? Piers Doherty, I'll put this one to you, that the HSC and Northern Ireland's Public Health Agency are saying quite clearly that if people fail to follow the public health guidelines, there will be a rise in cases and a possible reimposition of restrictions. Should that be stated to people to understand that there are consequences and potentially, you know, very immediate consequences if
absolutely. I think that and that is welcome, and that's you know, people are talking about it in their houses for right or wrong. They might be saying, well, look, you know, we've gone through huge sacrifices. We haven't been, you know, abusing the or breaking the restrictions, and that wasn't acknowledged. But at least they're talking about it. They're talking about in Donegal that the numbers are too high. Nobody can dispute that, particularly in certain parts of the county. And there is a risk, and we've seen it, and we've suffered as a result in Donegal, where Donegal went into restrictions at the end of last year before other counties. And so we're very, very well aware of this. So I think, you know, the good can come out of this here. There is a national focus in relation to what's happening in Donegal. I think that will result in additional resources from the HSE into Donegal. But most importantly, going back to my key point, is this is about individual decisions in terms of how we conduct ourselves over the next period
county. I'm going to move on, Ivana.
I think Tony Hoolan was right then, just to identify this, to be upfront about this. And again, to generate the sort of focus that we've seen that's so important in reducing transmission.
Okay, because I want to return now to that issue where hotel and guesthouse restaurants will be permitted to operate indoor dining options from June the 2nd, but independent restaurants, coffee shops and gastropubs will be restricted to outdoor dining only from June 7th. Adrian Cummins, CEO of the Restaurants Association, joins us now. Adrian, the Taoiseach speech on Thursday, where he said that you know, made this distinction between what hotels were going to be allowed to do and what restaurateurs would be permitted to do. How did that go down with your members?
Good afternoon, Katie. Well, our industry was in disbelief, confusion and frustration when we heard the comments from the Taoiseach. What we want to do with the government in partnership with them is to get all hospitality open safely and securely. And that includes restaurants, bars that serve food, wet pubs, and also the hotel industry together to provide a summer of staycation for the country. I listened intently to Professor Nolan's comments where he described hotels as large, low density, well ventilated. You could also have a restaurant that is large, low density and well ventilated. So we see this as being an anti-competitive, inequitable, discriminatory decision by the government.
But you must have heard there as well, Professor Nolan, warning that we have to tread so carefully and that indoor dining is high risk, and that surely that explains why all indoor dining isn't being permitted until later on in the summer, when they see how this new variant reacts over the next number of weeks and months.
Well, the Taoiseach has said yesterday in the Dáil that there was no medical or public health reason why indoor dining was being prohibited within restaurants, and hotel restaurants could open on the 2nd of June. So what we want to do is make sure that everybody is treated equally, that we're all in this together, and that we make sure that we do it properly, safely. But we don't understand why one part of the hospitality industry is being divided away and has been treated from an anti-competitive point of view.
OK. But what can you do about it, Adrian Cummins?
Well, first of all, we want to work in partnership with the government. We want to make sure that we have a dialogue with them. But there is growing concerns from individual restaurant owners that they would like to take a legal challenge to this to test the law. And if that comes about, obviously, and as an association, we would have to support our members if they did take a test case or a challenge with regard to this, because we see that it is on grounds that is anti-competitive, inequitable and discriminatory.
OK, just explain that to me now. Are you saying you have individual members who are considering taking a test case to challenge this this particular rule that is this part of the reopening process?
Yes, we do. And similar to the construction industry, where it was tested and challenged earlier on this year by individual construction companies, we within our industry, we have businesses that are extremely frustrated at the moment, that don't have a date for reopening their business viably, because 80% of restaurants and pubs that serve food cannot trade viably outdoors this summer. And that has to be articulated, that this is not a viable solution for the vast majority of businesses in the hospitality industry.
Okay, Peter Burke, that could be a case that would be very closely watched by a lot of people, that a legal challenge to this reopening plan.
Yeah, I think this is a very cautious approach that the government is taking, and I have sympathy from where Adrian is coming from, but I would have to say and suggest that you're talking about scale here. Residents of a hotel, like essential workers are now when they travel around, you know, obviously have to be provided with food. That is their residence. That is so different from you deciding to go out meeting five or six friends and go to a restaurant or go to a pub. I think the government was very quick to provide equality now in terms of wet pub and pubs of food.
Sure,
I think that has to be done.
Going to be, I'm not going to be travelling salesmen. You're going to be talking about people going on holidays with their families.
Absolutely, absolutely. But the turnover is less in terms of when you're staying in a hotel. It's different than in terms of the quantity of every restaurant in Ireland, every pub in Ireland being allowed to automatically now serve indoors. That increases the risk because it's a variant that we do not know how it's going to react indoors. And one thing I have to take issue with what Adrian says in terms of the viability issue, that is why we have a rates waiver.
If
that is why we have a temporary wage subsidy scheme. That's why we have given outdoor infrastructure grants.
But has the government made a rod for its own back here by allowing hotels to open at all then, or allowing hotels to
that
open
has always
with
been
this
the case.
Indoor dining?
Hotels have always been allowed to serve those who are resident within the hotel. And I think that is reasonable. I think if we're being pragmatic here, if you have to open all restaurants and all pubs in one foul swoop, the risk is great with this variant ever present in society. And I think the government has to take the advice from NPHET and put first in terms of reduce the turnover as much as possible. And this will give us an idea in terms of, as we open up, how our hotels are reacting, how the numbers are increasing or not. And that is key in terms of assessing the risk into the future. You have to be cautious.
Piers Doherty, we have to be cautious, and this is a practical solution.
Yeah, look, I can understand, you know, the public health advice here, and we haven't seen it, but I assume the public health advice is clear in relation to this here. And, you know, we're very clear in Sinn Féin that we would follow the public health advice because they're the experts and they're the best that can steer us through here. But look, there is reasonable and legitimate questions that are being asked by Adrian Cummins and members. And I really think, you know, and I can understand the cautious approach and taking it a step at a time. But the problem for restaurateurs is that they don't know when the final step is. They don't know when their shutters can go up and allow for indoor dining.
But I think Philip Nolan was very clear about why those kind of dates can't be, presented at this stage.
Look, I think people are grown up and understand that, you know, the virus is outside of our control to somewhat. Obviously, we can influence it. And dates can change. But there is no light at the end of the tunnel in terms of, you know, the roadmap that we were supposed to have, you know, which is very good in terms of reopening in other sectors. And it's really a good news story this week. There's no doubt about it. People want to get back to their lives in a cautious and safe way. But for restaurants and for pubs, there is no end in sight for when they can resume indoor dining or indoor drinking. And I think that's probably regrettable. I think if there was a date there, based on if we were able to suppress the virus, as Professor Nolan talked about, that we may not see an increase in numbers over the next number of weeks, as he was suggesting. And if that happens, what does that mean for indoor dining? And if that was given, I think, to the industry, even if it was a good bit out, I think it would reassure people better. But as we're seeing at the minute is, you have the discrepancy between hotels, and I think there's a responsibility for government to communicate the government that better to the industry.
The government have given a signal that if things go as planned, July will be a time, hopefully, for indoor dining to commence. But one thing is, we don't want to give false dawns to this sector, because one thing the government is very clear, what we reopen, we want to keep open.
Okay. Yeah.
And look, I think what we've learned over the last few months is the importance of cautious and careful approaches here. And I think all of us will feel enormous sympathy with Adrian and with his members in the restaurant trade, in bars and hospitality. At the same time, you know, it makes sense to have an incremental approach. I think the key thing is clarity of communication and an evidence basis. And I do think it's important that we would hear clarity around the evidence.
But you were told there
this.
Is no evidence. What the Taoiseach
well,
said.
Well, Philip Nolan, I think, there did give a much better basis, a much better rationale. Certainly, previously it sounded anomalous. But could I say this? I mean, there's other things that need to be communicated, and other people and other sectors that need clarity too. One big issue for so many women, particularly in their partners, is clarity around, can partners accompany pregnant women to antenatal appointments and during labour? That was something this week that was raised in the Dáil by Alan Kelly and others, and the Taoiseach and Taoiseach just said they would give clarity. Still nothing. So we need clarity always on all of these incremental reopening for all across society, just in hospitality.
I just want to go back to Adrian's comments. And Adrian, just a couple of texts. So dining out has become exclusive to those who can afford a hotel stay, says one texter. But another one saying the reopening roadmap strikes the right balance. Restaurants should stop complaining and trying to put people at risk for a small profit. That's from Luke.
I think that misses so much of the frustration and anguish for so many people running these businesses.
Yeah, Adrian?
I want to be very, very clear, Katie. We will follow public health advice. We always have and we always will. But there is a huge frustration out there amongst business owners. And that's why, without a clear date for reopening, like in Northern Ireland, like in Scotland, UK and England, when they did open their hospitality, they had clear dates and metrics around reopening. We don't even have a date. We have a possibility of us reopening at the end of July, as per the Taoiseach's comments. So there's a long road to go here for our industry, but there is extreme frustration for the staff that work in this sector also, and for the business owners.
Can I ask you about what we call the stay and spend scheme that had been launched for the last lockdown? And I say what it's been called because I don't think very many people stayed or spent in relation to that one. That has run out now. And I, there's some confusion about whether there's going to be a new version of. Actually, let me ask Peter Burke about that, and I'll come back to you, Adrian. Yeah. Peter, what is the story with the stay and spends? This is the incentive scheme to encourage people to get
absolutely
out there.
Absolutely, and unfortunately, and the pandemic took over in its worst effects last year. But hopefully, it's planned that there will be. There's also planned to
hang
be.
No, hang on a second now, because Pascal Dunhu indicated this week that there wasn't going to be.
Well, I think there's going to be a revised version as part of a whole package for our hospitality sector. The government has been very clear. It's given a signal that there's going to be a tailored package for our hospitality sector to get it back up and going. And that will be part of that.
And will it be revamped? Because there was a lot of complaints about how that was completely unworkable and too complicated and excluded huge numbers of people who you had to be a taxpayer, basically, to be able to avail of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Government will look at that, I've no doubt, because one thing is very clear, and it's been very clear on this, that the government will stand behind businesses. I hear Adrian's frustrations there and fully understand them. And that's why the schemes that we have at the moment are record in terms of their support in the interventions that have been taken by this government at every level. And that will continue as long as these restrictions are at bay.
Well, we need to hear, I think, a real commitment that they will continue. I mean, speaking to friends and neighbours in the hospitality industry, the idea that supports like the employment wage subsidy scheme and POP will run out at the end of June, we need to ensure a cautious unwinding with the cautious reopening and ensure that people aren't left going over a cliff edge. So, that's one key thing. Could I also say
I just want to bring Piers Doherty in on that. This was a big issue for you, Piers Doherty.
Yeah, look, you know, the government obviously tried to cut the pandemic unemployment payment in January of this year, and then February and March they were going to take it down by €50 each month. Thankfully, they reversed that decision. They had to. It was the wrong decision, but now they're planning to do the same on the aftermath of June and with a special cabinet meeting to be scheduled on this. And that's wrong in my view, because look, we're just after discussing about when indoor dining will take place. There are going to be people that are unemployed. The projections by the Department of Finance is 180,000 people will still be unemployed as a result of the pandemic at the end of the year. Many of them will not be able to go back to work as a result of public health restrictions. And there is a responsibility on government, while they continue with the public health restrictions that we support, that they support those employees by not cutting their wages. So the language coming from government is no cliff edge. But that's no good for somebody who is hearing the signals from government that they're going to cut their support by €50 or whatever come June, and then a bit more.
But
the
you do accept,
month.
do you, Piers Doherty, that this cannot carry on indefinitely?
Of course, nobody's suggesting that the pandemic unemployment payment would be continued indefinitely. But what we are saying is that while public health restrictions prevent people from going back to their place of employment, i.e. public health restrictions don't allow those companies to open up or open
but
up fully.
When public health restrictions are lifted fully, are you then...
Of course, when people can go back to work, then the pandemic is over and then they will rely on the social welfare protections. But there is a contract here where the government rightly have to close down businesses or restrict businesses, and therefore employees are left unemployed. And the contract is that we will support up to a certain level their employment or to their income. So, you know, these individuals are still paying sky-high rents in Dublin. These individuals are still paying, you know, in some instance, the highest mortgage rates in Europe. They're still paying childcare fees that are high. You know, so these bills didn't go away, and there's a responsibility on government to support them.
Okay.
The other thing I want to just say in terms of the voucher scheme, and we've made this very, very clear, like the government made a dog's dinner of the voucher scheme that we proposed. They need to bring forward a proper voucher scheme, as is happening similarly in the north, where it was announced yesterday about a high street spend where everybody's going to get £100 sterling. But there's also a second voucher scheme in the north in terms of hospitality, where you can get prepaid cards that allows people, when it's safe to do so, to go out to spend money in your hotels, your restaurants and your hospitality sector, the sector that is most affected as a result of the pandemic, and the sector that has most people unemployed as a result of the pandemic. And that's really important that it's done.
There's been huge scaremongering by Piers Doherty in terms of saying that the government is going to take supports away from people. It absolutely is not. And the only decision the cabinet ever took in the past is to extend the pandemic unemployment payment. It took that on a number of occasions, and the government has been very clear: if your business is closed because of restrictions that are imposed, we will support you, we will be there for you. And I noticed Piers reference in terms of the stay and spend Northern Ireland. He didn't in terms of the PUP, because ours was a very fast intervention. It was a reasonable amount, and obviously we're trying to get our businesses open now to stabilise our economy again. And every time I see now, we had the capacity to do this for our people because of the decisions that were taken over the last number of years. And many studios I was in where peers said, oh, spend the rainy day fund, it's raining now everywhere. Well, I don't know what he would call it now when he was saying it was raining back in 2019, 2018, 2017.
Well, look, well, I think
first of all, let me just make a point to Peter. There was actually nothing in the rainy day fund. You've never actually put money into it from the Exchequer.
There was
the
money put into it.
From the Exchequer, none.
And it might have been spent in one day, but there was money put into it.
The second thing is,
it's in terms of the approach of prudent management.
The second thing is, Peter, is that Pascal Donoghue did agree to cut the pup in January. He actually, I think, was on this programme with Katie Hannan.
No government decision. You said the government did not decide to cut the pup. It decided to extend it.
No, it was agreed to cut it in January.
I don't think this shouting across each other is helpful for anyone who's listening in, who's trying to think about getting their business back on track, trying to think about getting back to work. The key thing is to ensure not only continuation of the schemes beyond 30th of June when they're due to end, but also that there are transitional arrangements in place for people trying to get businesses back up and running, because nothing will start up immediately again. And could I just say this in terms of populism around vouchers and stay and spend. Really, the key thing here is to target incentivising spending. Let's have a summer bonus for all of those who are on social welfare, who are dependent currently on the wage subsidy scheme or the PUP. Let's have that targeted incentive to spend to those who will spend in the local economies and to help get hospitality and other businesses back up and running.
Let me just ask Adrian, whose target members will be very interested in how that scheme is set up. What kind of a scheme would you like to see, Adrian? And are you reassured by what you're hearing from Peter Burke there?
Well, what we want is a scheme that is that all hospitality and all tourism businesses can avail of. All citizens within the country can avail of the same scheme, and that the stay and spend scheme was too cumbersome. It didn't really target every person in the country. So what we want to do is, the minute our doors are open, we need a scheme in place to generate activity, to generate cash flow for businesses, and that's what they want. And we need that scheme delivered as quickly as possible for the restaurant industry, for the tourism and hospitality industry. But we also want to talk to the government on how that can be done and how it can be implemented.
Okay, we'll have to leave that there. We'll take a break, and after this we'll be talking about the Dublin Bay South by-election.
Tweet at SaturdayRTE.
Now, who will win former Housing Minister Owen Murphy's Dáil seat in what will be a hotly contested by-election in Dublin Bay South? It looks set to be an intriguing campaign. Fine Gael's James Gagan threw his hat in the ring yesterday. Our panellist, Ivana Bacik, is also in the ring for Labour, while Green Party chairperson and Lord Mayor Hazel Chew is hoping for the Green Party nomination to run. But will she get it? Claire Byrne, Green Party councillor on Dublin City Council for the South East Inner City. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Katie. Thanks for having me on.
You have, what they say in social media, some personal news.
I have some personal news. I've been waiting a long time to be able to use that phrase. Yes, I decided just this morning that I will also be putting myself forward as Green Party potential candidate for the Dublin State South by-election. Obviously, we'll have a selection convention to go through, because it will be myself and Hazel, and ultimately it'll be up to the members to choose. But I've been with the party for 16 years. I've been a councillor in the Dublin Bay South area since 2014. Firstly in Pembroke South Dock, then in South East Inner City, where I topped the poll in 2019. So I'm not a stranger to the people of Dublin Bay South. And I'm very familiar with the local issues that affect people who live there.
Yes, indeed. I mean, given that you've worked closely with, because you're in that constituency, obviously, you've worked closely with Eamon Ryan, Hazel would be, you would say, more closely aligned with Catherine Martin. So is this election convention going to be a proxy war between the two factions and the Green Party?
No, I don't see it at all. I see it as two very capable elected representatives putting themselves forward, taking the opportunity to elevate themselves to the Dáil. I mean, look, for me, to be honest, I've never really been an eye on the prize type, you know, dying to get into the Dáil. But this opportunity presented itself, I think, took us all by surprise. And I'd like to take the opportunity to wish Owen very well. But I had to give it a lot of thought. I had a lot of people asking me would I consider putting myself forward, both within the party and outside the party. But I have to think about it a lot. Life is very busy. I have two small children and I have to consider them. But I also spend a lot of time talking at Women for Election events and telling women to just go for it. So I kind of feel like I have to listen to my own advice and feel I owe to my children and to the party to put myself forward and try and get another green voice in the Dáil.
Okay. I want to ask your another woman who's putting herself forward, Ivana Bacic. What do you think this is going to be fought on? What's this election going to feature? Is it going to be a referendum on the pandemic handling?
It's very, at this point, one imagines it will be about COVID, about the legacy of COVID, also about the local issues around housing, around climate, around care, childcare and elder care. These are huge issues in the constituency. I should say, I'm delighted to hear Claire is putting her name in. Hi, Claire.
Thank you, Ivana. We're
neighbours. We're neighbours and friends in Portobello in the constituency. I'm just thrilled as somebody like Claire and so many others who's always championed getting more women into politics. I'm really pleased to see more women coming forward. I think it is really positive. We've recently had a woman provost elected in Trinity who pointed out it should be unremarkable when you have, a number of women all contesting one election. So that's super. I do want to wish Owen Murphy the very best, in his future, because I know him. I know what a tough time he's had. And I think, the fact that, as Claire says, that he announced his resignation this week did indeed take all of us by surprise. But it is an opportunity to contest an election on COVID issues and also on issues around public services, particularly around housing and around health
indeed.
And care. And that's hugely important. Today on May Day, Katie, just as we think of President Michael D. Higgins' point about caring and the importance of caring, I think that's going to be a huge issue.
We're almost out of time. Peter Burke, this is Fine Gael's to lose, though, isn't it?
Well, you never know in elections. It's always very competitive. It's a very unusual constituency in terms of the high-profile nature of it and the high-profile candidates that it's had in the past.
How will it be managed, though? I mean, there won't be any door-knocking, presumably.
Yeah, it's difficult to know. Obviously, we've had the general scheme of the Electoral Reform Bill, which is now under pre-leg scrutiny. That's going through the Oireachtas. So it potentially could be over 2 days, potentially. But I would hope that if we're on target, and hopefully we are, that we will have our population vaccinated at that stage. We hopefully will be in a better place in terms of how we can interact. And obviously, canvassing is outdoors. There's a lot of campaigning that can be done outdoors. Shoe leather and hard work going from door to door.
When does it have to be held by? Are we looking at an autumn election?
I think the latest timed actual date can be is November. So that's the latest date. So hopefully things would have changed a lot by then.
Well, we'll be ready for it whenever it comes up, Peter.
The beginning or end of November, I would.
I think mid-November. It has to be between the 18th and the 25th day after the writ is moved in the Dáil. You have 6 months to move the writ in the Dáil. So it depends when the government decides to move the writ. And secondly, the timeline thereafter, the 18th or the 25th day when the Taoiseach calls it.
Okay. I think that is all we have time for. Thank you to my panellists. Thank you to all the guests who came online. The programme today was produced by Mary O'Hagan. Research was by Andrew Fleming. The broadcast coordinator is Elaine Conlon. Tom Norton was on sound. I'll be back on air, I am delighted to say, because Late Debate is back after a long hiatus due to COVID. We're back on air at 10 p.m. on Tuesday night. But until then, thank you for listening and enjoy the rest of your bank holiday weekend.
Saturday with Katie Hannan. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.